Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, folks. Welcome to Right from the Left Coast. And oh, yes, it's an Alice in Wonderland upside down world today, as it usually is, chasing rabbits down a rabbit hole. It's your host, Linda, coming to you from Oceanside, California. We do have a great day here. It's about 70 degrees. It's gorgeous weather, blue skies, no clouds, and a slight ocean breeze. Absolutely. Thank you so much for those who are here, Michael Magic and Yola, of course. And whoever the guest is, 5482, welcome to the show. I've got so much to talk about today. I'm going to get to what we did yesterday at the rally, but I wanted to make sure that I talked about what happened in Indiana and the other states yesterday. It looked like Lugar went down. Let's see. I did a little bit of research on this clown, the senator. He was first elected to the Senate in 1976, which gives him 36 years, or probably the second or third century that he's been serving. And then I noticed there was, we had Indiana, we had West Virginia and North Carolina voting in a primary. And, of course, Romney swept most of them. We had, I'm watching the ticker tape on Fox yesterday as the results were coming in. I think it was 96% of the vote and all this stuff. So it goes across the board, Gingrich got 6% of the votes, and Santorum got an average of 13%. Ron Paul was like 16 to 20%. Romney was anywhere from 68 to 73 or whatever percent. I was a little confused since Gingrich and Santorum. I know that the names are still on the ballots because they got out late in the race, and it's bizarre. So I must be missing something. Do these voters have people helping them put food into their mouths? Help me out here, because I don't know what I'm missing. How do you tie your shoes when you vote for someone who's not running anymore? I get a little confused. You guys type it in if you can figure it out for me. There was one thing yesterday on Glenn Beck's TV show, which was GBTV. Both of his 2 hours were fantastic. He was on with the author of Wrath and Righteousness, which I can, anyone who is a subscriber to GBTV can get this for free. You download it at glennbeck.com, and it's called, I can't remember the guy's name, Chris something, who wrote it. But the second hour yesterday was on the Real News from The Blaze, which is 6 p.m. East on GBTV. This was the documentary about Scott Walker, and I highly recommend it to everyone because it's a must-see. It's in the archives of yesterday's show on GBTV. They, you know, talked about what this courageous, patriotic governor has tried to do the right thing. And he's not standing down, which I give him a lot of credit for. There's very few people with courage anymore, conviction or honor. and he's one of them. I know John Kasich has tried in Ohio to do the right thing, and so many others. Of course, not in California. We've got the most liberal state in the union outside of maybe progressive socialist Hawaii. It's pretty sad what's going on. So yesterday, I was calling into Bill and Hollis's show from the rally, right on the ground in Oceanside. The horns were honking in approval of getting our no on E. So it's a big battle because people don't understand the real issues. On the 15th, I'm attending a meeting of one of the conservative Tea Party groups here in town. I believe it's going to be in Vista, very close to me. One of the people from Action, who is also a conservative, is going to be able to speak, and she's going to give the people, you know, the information that they need, and I'm going to be there to support her. And if I know that I'm not on the roster to speak, but I'd love to have other people there too. Maybe I can get Chris Meinson is great. She's on Americans Protecting Property Rights, our Anti-Agenda 21 Task Force, and that girl, she gets the Delphi technique down. She'll stand up and she'll speak out of turn, man. she's fearless. So I'd love to have her there too. So what brought to mind what's going on in Oceanside, and one of the reasons that they're trying to get rid of these mobile home parks in the city of Oceanside, and in the, of course, the entire state of California, is the Smart Growth Plan and the UN Agenda 21 in ICLEI. So this particular item came across my desk from one of the Action people who are trying to help save our homes. Oceanside City Council approves affordable housing plan. You guys got to hear this. It's astounding. A plan to give developers incentives to build housing for people of moderate and low income was tentatively adopted by the Oceanside City Council on Wednesday, which was probably about a week and a half ago or so, known as bonus density. Oh, this has got ICLEI written all over it. The plan would allow developers to build larger projects than zoning ordinance would ordinarily allow if the developers agree to include affordable housing in their project or donate land to the city, which can be used for affordable housing projects. Well, one of the tenets of UN Agenda 21 is affordable housing, so that's a key issue. Our council members vote, they only had four people, that was vote 3-1, voting against, the rest voted for it. Esther Sanchez voted against it for different reasons, and she said she wanted to make sure that the plan would not concentrate low-income housing in a few neighborhoods. And her concern is we do not yet have a plan where we will go. She said she wanted to avoid creating another Crown Heights, referring to a neighborhood troubled by gang violence, including a huge spate of recent shootings, which can happen in those barrios, which are all through Oceanside. This is all part of this general plan mess. So I have my Google alerts now, and I get told when they're going to have meetings, and I'm going to make sure that I get into these planning commission meetings. Senior planner Russ Cunningham said individual projects would require planning commission review. It's interesting at the end of this because I live right where they're trying to do this, and they've been trying to do this for a long time. They want to widen Douglas. We're on Douglas and Mission, close to the San Luis Rey Mission, which is a very historical site, and they want to do this high-density, ICLEI nonsense, you know, Stepford City stuff, and we're trying to fight it. So housing is considered affordable when it is priced so that a family of four with an income of $48,000 a year or less would spend no more than 30% of their income on rent or mortgage payments. The plan brings city ordinances into compliance with state law, because California is, you know, part of all this ICLEI nonsense, and AB 32, which is cap and trade here in California, but adds a wrinkle by allowing developers to donate land for affordable housing that is not near their project, as long as the land is along, get this, transit corridors. This is all ICLEI, said senior city planner Russ Cunningham, who obviously does not have a clue about A21. We actually are offering more flexibility. Oh, boy. You could still donate land that is not transit-oriented. Yeah, wait. Wait, Randy. Or Russ. The theory behind including transit-oriented property is that you're going to love this. This is so ickly. Is that people who need lower cost housing are more likely to also need public transportation, the senior planner said. Yeah, that's because they're going to take us out of our cars, believe me, dumb idiots. State law requires cities to provide a density bonus. Yeah, this is it. State law in California requires cities to provide a density bonus to developers that take steps to provide affordable housing. Among other things that can include building affordable housing mixed in with market rate units and their projects, or donating land for separate affordable housing projects. This is all this stack and rack, and they've got storefronts underneath and apartments on the top. Yeah, it's a mess. They've tried it in several cities. I think there's one in Oceanside, at least maybe two or three, and most of them are vacant because they charge an arm and a leg for this. And people in Oceanside, I mean, the only people who could afford it would be rich people from L.A. or Beverly Hills. Under the state law, Cunningham said, cities don't have to accept the land as meeting affordable housing requirements unless the donated land is adjacent to the main project or within 1/4 mile of it and can accommodate at least, listen to this, 40 apartments or condominiums or homes. Yeah, they're stacking everybody together in clumps. Oceanside planners have opted to also allow developers to donate land, you're going to dig this, within 1/4 mile radius, sprinter stations along Oceanside Boulevard, another ickly deal, within a 1/4 mile buffer zone along the Coast Highway, and within 1/4 mile of North County Transit District's bus route 303, which runs along Mission Avenue, where I'm at, Douglas Drive, which is where Mission Douglas is where our mobile home park is, North River Road, and Highway 76. That's why they want to scrap these mobile homes completely, take them off the site, and the developers are going to make lots of money, and they can do whatever they want, and they're going to play right into the hands of UN Agenda 21. This is the information I am going to be taking to every meeting that I can, along with Ickley's plan, the Stepford plans of every city, including Escondido, Vista, Oceanside, Encinitas, all the rest of this nonsense, and as much information as I can on these issues. So resident Joan Brown said she was concerned that the city would cram too much housing on one site. Oh, yeah. Every general plan meeting I've been to, it's exactly what they want to do. They want to just jam these huge development things on one-acre lots. It's unbelievable, guys, and it's making me crazy. The problem we have is the city putting too much housing on one area. It's going to turn from affordable to nobody wants to live there. And that's what we're up against here. I mean, I've totally understood this from the get-go on studying Agenda 21. I also sent Robert Kaplan the information on A21 because he had requested it. So hopefully that will be something he can get into, and then he and I can talk back and forth, and I'll give him as much as I can on it. This was kind of fun. I wanted to go ahead since there's only three of us here today, but hopefully some will join. This was done by Michelle Malkin. I don't know if you guys heard about this. I'm sure you have. Her article says, quick, hide under the covers. The nation's storyteller, Barack Obama, unveiled. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show. The nation's storyteller, Barack Obama, unveiled a frightening new fable on the internet intended to scare women away from supporting fiscal conservatives in November. But as is increasingly common with Obama's social media propaganda initiatives, the life of Julia immediately flopped. Why? Because, one, self-sufficient women voters aren't as sheepish as Democratic strategists make them out to be. And, two, conservative activists are overtaking Obama's zombie army online. Non-delusional Americans don't want cradle-to-grave utopians turning their country into the next Greece or Spain. And, four, responsible grown-ups are getting sick and tired of radical Saul Alinsky-style tall tales from the progressive Pied Piper. Oh, I love her. She's just great. In fact, I had my mom read this article, and she says, who's Michelle Malkin? So I had to enlighten her and handed her Michelle's book called Culture of Corruption. So she's reading it. Love it. And everyone, welcome to the show. I hope we get more people in later. Going on with Michelle, using snazzy graphics and interactive slideshow features, BarackObama.com spins a glowing narrative of imaginary Julia's life from age 3 to 67, but Julia is a pathetic figment of the progressive imagination. She simply cannot function without the lifelong intervention of federal patriarchs. Instead of two parents preparing her for school, Obama credits Head Start bureaucrats with ensuring that Julia is ready to learn and succeed in kindergarten. Instead of individual teachers, private mentors, homeschool organizers, or charter school leaders, Obama extols his federal Race to the Top program for implementing the high school classes she needs to do well in college. Unbelievable. Instead of a thrift-minded families who save for their own kids' higher educations, or who opt for non-college alternatives, and who encourage those kids to work in the private sector summer jobs, Obama praises his opportunity tax credit and Pell grants for putting Julia through college. Instead of acknowledging how costly Obamacare mandates have caused individual market health care insurers to drop plans altogether, Obama promotes the government-manufactured umbilical cord tethering children like Julia to their parents' health care plans until age 26. Instead of accepting that the costs and consequences of a woman's sexual choices should be a matter of personal responsibility, Big Daddy Obama heralds his religious liberty-crushing birth control abortion mandate for allowing Julia to focus on her work instead of worrying about her health. Despite the fact that most private health care plans already covered maternal screenings, prenatal care, and related screenings before Obamacare passed, the president attributes Julia's pregnancy well-being to the law. He says, Ron says, I think it would be great if Linda and myself, as well as others, could do live videos. Some of these, oh, yes, be fun. We got to do it, Ron. So I'm going to continue with this. It's almost done with this part. Absolutely, Ron. We've got to do it. Michelle Malkin goes on, and it's not local sovereignty or financial discipline that results in better schools for Julia's new son, Zachary. Nope. It's Obama's investments in education and programs like Race to the Top. Is there nothing Race to the Top can't do? Under President Obama, the campaign web feature then grows. Julia starts her own web business. She qualifies for a Small Business Administration loan, giving her the money she needs to invest in her business. President Obama's tax cuts for small businesses like Julia's help her to get started. She's able to hire employees, creating new jobs in her town, and helping to grow the local economy. In the real world, according to Dun & Bradstreet, the SBA supported fewer than 62,000 small business loans, a measly 0.2% of the nation's 27.5 million small businesses. The vast majority of entrepreneurs get their start without the SBA's help and want only one thing: for Obama and his wealth confiscators to leave them the heck alone. Absolutely, Ms. Malkin. As soon as Obama publicized the life of Julia on the web, conservative activists swarmed Twitter to provide real-world counter-narratives. I'm no Julia, one wrote. A small business owner, I'm being taxed to death. And I need government to get out of my way and let me make money. Amen. Sounds like Hayek to me. Another young conservative female tweeted, as a woman business owner, I'm offended that POTUS thinks I need him to survive and thrive. Conservative writer Kimberly Kay added, what the Julia example really shows is the Democrat ideal. Well, I call it the commie ideal. Complete and total reliance on the government. Oh, yeah, that would be Karl Marx. My story, I've founded three web ventures over the past 8 years with out a penny of taxpayer money or government venture socialism. We free market-centered small business women can't grow the local economy and raise our children and improve our schools. We free market women can grow the local economy, raise our children, and improve our schools just fine without the meddling patriarchal hand of President Obama taking credit for our every last success. After hyperventilating for months about the Republican war on women, Democrat new media gurus inadvertently have exposed the real Barack Obama, a chauvinistic control freak who would tether every last woman and child to his ever-expanding, budget-busting nanny state. Mamas, for the sake of your family's freedom and our republic's survival, don't let your babies grow up to be Julia. Good one, Michelle Malkin. Hat tip to you. Yes. Okay. I was going through this new book. I did finish Lenin, Stalin, and Hitler because I had finally gotten through the 600 pages, and I read the epilogue, which actually made me cry. I'm telling you guys, and I have told everybody I see in person, in the supermarket, at the Ron Paul event, read that book. It is absolutely amazing. One of the gals, Maureen, who was at the Ron Paul event, asked me to email her with the information on the book, and I absolutely did. So I've got, like I said, I've got people reading history now. It's just amazing. Welcome, guest 5748, and everyone here. This new one I'm reading is by David Barton called American History in Black and White. And I was just going to give you a couple small things here. It was kind of cool. In his foreword, he says, African Americans originally came to America unwillingly, having been stolen and sold by Muslim slave catchers in Africa to Dutch traders journeying to America in the year 1619. Yet they have withstood those dark beginnings to become the fiber in the fabric of American society. As President William Howard Taft admiringly noted, their ancestors came here years ago against their will, and now this is their only country and their only flag. They have shown themselves anxious to live for it and to die for it. Is everyone getting sound? Do you have to refresh, yo? I hope everyone can hear me. This was also in the book. I'm still reading through. It's just amazing. David talks about Frederick Douglass and Frederick Douglass's two separate inquiries into the document, of course, the Constitution and the three-fifths clause provision, and then came to realize that this was a pro-anti-slavery document, the Constitution itself. So here, if I can get to it, yeah, it's in here, slavery. Yeah, David does a great job. So what we were going through was the, oh, here it is. Following the passage of those pro-slavery laws in Congress, many of 1854, in May of 1854, a number of the anti-slavery Democrats in Congress, along with some anti-slavery members from other political parties, including, get this, the Whigs, Free Soilers, and Emancipationists, formed a new political party to fight slavery and secure equal civil rights for Black Americans. And you folks may or may not know the name of that party. And it says the name of that party, they called it the Republican Party because they wanted to return to the principles of freedom and equality first set forth in the governing documents of the Republic before pro-slavery members of Congress had perverted those original principles. One of the founders of that new party was U.S. Senator Charles Sumner, who had taken the seat of the great Senator Daniel Webster. Sumner had a record of promoting civil rights way back then in the 1800s. In fact, he had championed the desegregation of public schools in Boston and argued on that issue before the state Supreme Court. What I love about Barton, this guy's been doing this since he's like 15 years old, and outside the Library of Congress, I think he has the most original documents in anyone's possession other than the Library of Congress. However, there was another issue here. This is one, let's see, came across my desk. This was True News Radio. There was an interview on this one Wednesday. Private investigator Doug Hagman said reliable sources told him the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is preparing for a massive civil war in America. It says, folks, we are getting ready for one massive economic collapse, Hagman told True News host Rick Wiles. And It says, we have problems. The federal government is preparing for civil uprising, he added. So every time you hear about troop movements, every time you hear about movements of military equipment, the militarization of the police, the buying of ammunition, all of this is they, DHS, are preparing for massive uprising. Hegman goes on to say that his sources tell him the concerns of the DHS stem from a collapse of the U.S. dollar and the hyperinflation, a collapse in the value of the world's primary reserve currency implies to a nation of 311 million Americans who, for the significant portion of the population, we are armed. Uprisings in Greece is indeed a problem, but an uprising of armed Americans becomes a matter of serious national security. A point addressed in a recent report by the Pentagon and highlighted as a vulnerability and threat to the U.S. during war game exercises at the Department of Defense last year. According to one of the DOD's war game participants, Jim Rickards, author of Currency Wars, The Making of the Next Global Crisis. Through his sources, Hagman confirmed Rickards' ongoing thesis of a fear of a U.S. dollar collapse at the hands of the Chinese. Oh, hell, we don't need the Chinese. They're doing a great job at the Fed. U.S. Treasury bond holders of approximately $1 trillion and possibly the Russians threatening to launch a gold-backed ruble as an attractive alternative to the U.S. dollar. In retaliation for aggressive U.S. foreign policy initiatives against China's and Russia's strategic allies, Iran and Syria. Lovely. The one source that I've known since 1979, Hagman continued. He started out as a patrol officer and currently he is now working for a federal agency under the umbrella of the Department of Homeland Security. He is in a position to know what policies are being initiated, what policies are being planned at this point, and he's telling us right now, look, what you're seeing is just the tip of the iceberg. We are preparing, we meaning the government, preparing for a massive civil war in this country. There is no hyperbole here, he added, echoing Trends Research Institute founder Gerald Celente's forecast of last year. Celente expects a collapse of the U.S. dollar and riots in America sometime this year. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, I was just calling in to listen.
Okay, fantastic. And I also am welcoming the guests, the Ozone. I have two that I'm not sure. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to finish this and then I'll take more callers. Since Celente's Civil War prediction of last year, executive orders, NDA, and National Defense Resource Preparedness were signed into law by President Obama, which are both politically damaging actions taken by a sitting president, you think, and most recently requests made by the DHS for the procurement of 450 million rounds of hollow point ammunition only fuels speculation of an upcoming tragic event expected on American soil. These major events, as shocking to the American people as they are, have taken place during an election year. Escalating preparatory activities by the executive branch and DHS throughout the last decade, from the Patriot Act to countless executive orders drafted to suspend or strip Americans of civil liberties, are just the beginning of the nightmare to come, Hagman said. He added, it is going to get much worse toward the election, and I'm not even sure we're going to have an election in this country. It's going to be that bad, and this as well is coming from my sources. But one source in particular said, look, you don't understand how bad it is. This stuff is real. These people, the DHS, they are ready to fight the American people. True News asked Hagman, who does the DHS expect to fight in particular? Another North versus South, the Yanks against Confederates. Hagman stated the situation is far worse than a struggle between any two factions within the U.S. It's an anticipated nationwide emergency event centered on the nation's currency. what they, DHS, are expecting, and again, this is according to my sources, what they are expecting is the unsustainability of the American dollar. And we know for a fact that we can no longer service our debt. There is going to be a period of hyperinflation. The dollar will be worthless. The economy, the economic collapse will be so severe, people won't be ready for this. And that's what everybody's worried about. And that's the problem. Nobody, they don't get it. No one's listening. They, you know, your area code, who is just listening, is 917. Where are you from?
I'm from New York.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, I'm from California. We got two libtard states on the air right now. Fantastic.
Yes, yes.
And welcome, Jomer. I'm not sure. And I don't know what your first name. My name's Linda. I'm in Oceanside.
My name is Jay. I'm the Ozone in the chat.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. And anyone else who would like to call in, unless you want me to read from David Barton's book, just come in and talk to me. I know Michael was dealing with okay, hi, Oz. Welcome. Everybody's here. This is great. We've got so many crazy things, and for those who joined late, we talked about Murdoch beating Lugar in the primary, and the idiot voters, I think it was 6%, and I don't know, 13%, because they were voting for Santorum and Gingrich, who are not running anymore. So I thought, God, do these guys have keepers to help feed them? I mean, how do you tie your shoes and vote for somebody who's not running anymore? Anyway, so again, our number is 646-378-0321. I'm going to go ahead and put that in the chat room. And Ozone, it's great to have you here. What part of New York?
I grew up in Queens, but now I'm in Long Island, which is
okay.
A couple of miles away.
We have one person. She's in upstate. And she's listed. Well, I think she's gone now. She had to drop out because she had people wanting food at her house. She's in upstate New York, and she's a great person here on our site. And we have Exit Babylon. Hello. Welcome. Anyone who would like to call in and weigh in on what's going on, please do that. Patriotism is idolatry and has no place in the kingdom. Okay. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the family. Welcome to the show. You missed the first part about Lugar in Indiana. Was happy to hear that happened. And, I mean, that Murdoch got in and, you know, after 36 years or 36 millennium of being in the Senate, finally we have a Tea Party person coming in. So, let's see, we have, yeah, hi, Bill. He types in, hi, Linda. Thank you. I hope you guys can hear me. Some people are having trouble with sound, but and I was hoping everybody got the blast. I did it twice. The Blog Talk Radio came through loud and clear for me on my email, so, you know, we're just dealing with that. Again, we have an open line right now, 646-378-0321. All callers are welcome. If you'd like to talk about the book that I read from, David Barton's American History in Black and White, anything that we've talked about today with Department of Homeland Security, talking about the fictitious Julia from Ovamit, you know, just, and then of course he comes out in favor of gay marriage, and in 2008 he was against it. You know, it's always, I was for it before I was against it, you know, and that's his way of voting present again, as he did in the Senate so many times. Yeah, it's just, it's unbelievable. Okay, I couldn't understand what Ron was typing in the chat. The top page click. Link playing or default player. Oh, that's somebody. He's talking to you guys. Okay. All right, you guys. Bill, Ron, call in. Come on, Michael, call me. Anyway, Ozone, hope you're doing okay. Hello?
Hey. Yeah. You know, if I could just say about Obama, he said his the position was evolving from the beginning. I mean, and so basically he's saying it's going to change. You know, he's telling people, this is what I believe now, but it's going to change for four years, and then it changed.
Yeah, he's a flip-flopper. I mean, this guy, And because of the media, he's Teflon. I mean, if you think Clinton was Teflon, oh, Bill, Slick Willie can't hold a candle to this clown. It's unbelievable. Okay, I've got Ron on the air. Hello, you're on the air. Hi, Ron.
Hey, Linda. Sorry, when I was trying to get in, I didn't get to hear.
Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, you didn't get to hear what?
I didn't get to hear Ozone's comment.
Oh, okay.
I just said that Obama was saying his position on gay marriage was evolving from the beginning, which means that it's going to change. I mean, it's unbelievable, a tactic that actually worked.
Yeah, I don't know that it worked. I don't think he's fooling anyone. I'm going to have to call back in. I'm really getting a bad feedback.
Okay. I'm hoping it's not my... Okay.
I'm hearing everything I say repeated back to me like somebody got
there.
Yeah,
that happens. Sometimes, I'll bet you're on Skype.
Yes.
I know. That happens all the time. It's crazy.
It's very annoying, to say the least. Well, let me hang up, and I'll try calling back in.
Okay, thanks. All right. Anyway, Ozone, what did you think about my piece on the Department of Homeland Security gearing up for civil war in the country?
Wait, can you repeat that? I lost you for a second.
What did you think about my piece that I read on Department of Homeland Security gearing up for civil unrest in the country?
I didn't hear it, but I'd be worried. I wouldn't put anything past the left, anything.
Yeah, it's getting very frightening, and I think that, unfortunately, I'm going to try to pick him up again. Hello, Ron.
Yeah, it's still there.
Oh, darn it. How about, can you use a cell phone or a landline?
Yeah, I'll call in on the landline.
Okay. Anyway, Ozone, what I was saying was what happened is everybody has been predicting the collapse of the dollar for a long time, not just Glenn Beck, not just ABC, not just Eric Stackelback, not just Robert Kiyosaki, all of these players, everybody on trend.com, everybody from Real Econ TV, all the people who understand economics, you know, from a constitutional standpoint, from a free market, a non-fiat currency situation, this can't continue, and they all know it. And so this is why they bought up the 450 million rounds of hollow point ammunition. And we'll try that, Ron. And they're doing the FEMA camps, and they're doing everything else. I mean, these guys, and the sad part is people will not listen. They've still got their heads in the sand. And I try to tell people, they just ignore me. They think I'm nuts. And so half the time I can't, you know, I'm always preaching to the choir, but I keep trying. That's all I can do, because I want people to have food storage and water and gas cans and, you know, their tank always half full, and grab some cash and put it in your safe, whatever. Get the silver. Just, you know, unplug. You know, pay off your credit cards. You know. And talk to your neighbors and everybody form a coalition, because when it comes down, it's not going to be pretty. And you've got to have, you know, I've got pocket constitutions coming out my wazoo, and I'm ready to, you know, I've got books on history and the founding, you know, to stack up to my ceiling, and I've read some of them twice and all of them once, and I plan to help lead into the right direction. I don't want to be that person who promises the hope and change like Hitler and vomit, you know, and Stalin, and say, oh, come this way, I'll save you, I have the answer. No, I'm going to tell them the truth and say, look, it's going to be ugly, but you don't want to go that way with your chest. You don't want to go to FEMA. No, come with me. Here's my, read this. You know,
that's a wonderful thing. You know, that's what we need people to do, exactly what you're doing.
Thank you,
you know, even if it's only, even if you only reach even 100 people, you know, or 1,000, or even maybe 5, but one of them is going to realize it, and he's going to tell 10,000, or who knows?
Yes.
You never even know. So, you know, and this is what we need. We got to do. We don't need rallies in the street like they do with their union workers. We need this.
Yeah, the days. You're right. Yeah, he's right, Ron. The days of
I agree. You know, the whole Occupy thing, and I mean, these people, it's so overplayed. Personally, for me, this whole gay marriage thing is just the biggest misdirection and ruse on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, quite honestly, I mean, if you stop and think about it for a moment, the majority of people that really even care about gay marriage are not on the conservative side of the fence. You know, they're progressives, and they want people to accept their perversion of things.
Right.
The state certainly has or should have the prerogative to recognize or not recognize a marriage based on the criteria that the state sets. I would say the bigger question ought to be, should we be involved or should the state be involved in licensing the act of marriage in the first place? You know, traditionally that came from the church, and it's a contract or a covenant between a man and a woman and God. And I think we ought to just leave the state out of it completely.
Yeah.
That will evade the constitutional question. I've talked about that before. Sooner or later, someone is going to bring up the 14th Amendment and equal protection and equal application of the law. Today, being married doesn't give you any real benefit when it comes to taxes. There's actually a marriage penalty now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I, as far as insurance proceeds and that kind of thing, I understand that. And I don't think that anyone, you know, I wouldn't begrudge anyone that. If they want to live a gay lifestyle, that's up to them. Just don't ask me to endorse it.
Right. Well, you know, that whole thing that he just came out with, what was it, today or yesterday, and everybody's playing it. I know Hannity was playing it. I turned him off after about half an hour because I'm tired of hearing it. You know. It's sad because Hannity, I think, used to be a good talk show host. But basically, he's just pandering for the gay votes. I swear to God. He knows he's going to lose.
He's not even pandering for the gay vote, because what he did today was tell everybody, hey, if you want to pay $40,000 a plate or $4,000 a plate, I'm all for gay marriage. You know,
God,
so it's a pay to gay. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous.
He's
and the fact that we're even having the conversation is ridiculous, you know? I mean, common sense is so far from common that it's pathetic that we can actually sit and have an adult conversation in this country, in this day and age, as to whether or not being gay is proper. I'm not talking about morality. I'm not talking about the Bible. Just look at nature, okay?
Yep.
Men and women were designed to be able to procreate. Men and men and women don't have that prerogative. You know, if people want to do that, that's fine. But again, you don't have the right to force me to accept or endorse your lifestyle.
Right, or pay for it.
Right, exactly. And that's essentially what they're doing. And it's not so much a monetary thing with the gay movement as it is an acceptance thing.
Right.
They want to be legitimized in the eyes of the state.
Because,
and I just think it's ridiculous.
Because, Ron, if you go through the, I don't think it's 40 or 100 tenets of the Communist Manifesto, that's one of their goals, is to make sure that this perversion is considered normal by the majority of the people.
Absolutely. That is the agenda, the goal. They want it to be normalized. And it's and it can't be anything, you know, it's anything but normal.
It's
abnormal behavior. Plain and simple. Now, you know, we could argue about whether people are born that way. Personally, I don't care.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I don't mean to sound crass or rude, but I don't care. I married a woman because I'm attracted to women. I might feel differently if I was attracted to men, but I'm not. And
thank God.
You know, it's not normal. It's abnormal behavior.
Well, Ron, I think many, many moons ago, you and I would not be here if that was normal, because there's no procreation.
Sure. It's no different than, you know, the abortion issue. People try to justify and rationalize things that they know aren't normal or aren't right. They're not correct. Killing unborn children in the womb is an immoral act. Period. I don't care how you try to justify it or rationalize it.
Eugenics.
Could there be some extreme outside case? You know, things happen. Strange things happen. And, you know, it's a case-by-case basis. But it's not my decision. And it's not the state's decision.
Right.
I think at the very least it should be left between a woman and her doctor. You know, and if that's the choice, great. But too many of these people simply want to avoid personal responsibility, okay, because they can't keep their legs closed.
Exactly.
And, you know, you're irresponsible, you get pregnant, and it's an inconvenient baby, so we'll just do away with it.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely
terrible. Well, they're using it for birth control is what they're doing. And in some cases, and then you have the other end of the spectrum where they just pop them out like, you know.
Well, that's true.
Rabbits. And then they want everyone else to be responsible for those kids. They're out of wedlock. They've got 10 different dads, you know, with 14 kids. And this is the entitlement mentality that just drives me up a pole. And it's like, oh, my gosh. And it goes
down the same path. It is a fundamental lack of responsibility for a person's own action.
Yes.
Nobody's responsible for themselves. It's always someone else. And that's really what it comes down to. It doesn't matter whether it's a gay lifestyle or abortion or having 15 kids that you can't afford. And, I mean, you know, drug use, people get addicted. You know what? Don't do it. Don't take that first try. You know,
exactly.
But that's a personal choice.
And then if you do have a problem, there's so many places out there like AA and others that are faith-based or whatever. And you can get help if you want to.
Sure.
Heck, you can go read the Bible and get help. That's godly counsel.
It goes back to the conversation that Michael and I were having some time ago about homeless. Not everyone chooses to be homeless, but, you know, some do.
Yeah.
Some people do choose that, and it's their prerogative. But don't expect that when you make a choice, don't expect that I am going to support you in your choice with my money.
Right, especially if it's forced out of your pocket by the nanny state and then given it to somebody else.
Right. Don't expect the state to steal from me to support your poor decisions. That's really what it boils down to.
Exactly. It's that whole Marxist, you know, redistribution of wealth. And I just call it thou shalt not steal. That's just me. You know. And it is theft. And we've talked
certainly
about that.
Certainly it is.
Yeah, and it's not right. And that's another war issue.
I was hoping to respond to Exit Babylon that said patriotism is idolatry. I'd like to know what his definition of patriotism is, first of all. I know what mine is, and it really has nothing to do with the state or with government or with idolatry. It has to do with standing on the principles that do come from the Bible and from God, that all men are created equal and we all have the same right to existence and life without interference in that life from our neighbors. And, you know, when you have a government, government is nothing more than a collection of people that have been elected, to carry out the laws of society. Those laws are based, whether people like it or not, they are largely based on biblical principles. Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, and so on and so forth. So it's real plain and simple stuff. That's why the founders wrote, you know, Jefferson wrote, we hold these truths to be self-evident, because they were obvious, even to someone who had no education. just, you know, growing up on the farm, you didn't have to go to college to know that it was wrong to murder someone. You didn't need a fifth grade education to know that it was wrong to rape your cousin or anyone else for that matter.
I know.
It was self-evident. You knew it was wrong before you undertook the action. And there are consequences to actions. That's the other thing that we continually forget.
Yes.
And that's why we have this loss of common sense.
You
know, it was called the common law because a person of common intelligence could understand what his obligation was to the rest of society, his fellow man, under the law.
And what you're talking about, when you talk about common sense and common law, and then you have these ambulance-chasing lawyers and all these clowns that, you know, love to be the defense attorneys and pervert everything upside down and say, oh, well, that person's not responsible because he was taking this drug and or he was manic depressive or he was schizophrenic or, you know, oh, please.
But let me tell you where the danger lies in that. And this is something I've had a lot of people really fuss at me about. I've had the Chamber of Commerce and everybody else, you know, writing me emails and whatnot, and I send them back nasty grams right back to them. The solution, we are told, is tort reform.
Ah.
To limit the amount that someone can be awarded as damages in a lawsuit and so on. Well, you know, that's putting the cart in front of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, if we had a society of people who used common sense,
you wouldn't need it.
These cases that, you know, the crazy ones that we always hear about would never make it through a courtroom. It wouldn't happen. But no, because we have this, no one is responsible.
Yeah.
There's free money flowing from the government, and every corporation in the world is multi-trillionaires, and besides, they've got insurance. And so, you know, in the end, nobody's going to be hurt if we give this person an award of $3 million. This company can afford it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
No, we've got to get back to common sense. The moment you eliminate or limit, put limitations on a lawsuit and damages, then what you do is take those people that have legitimate claims where the damages should be excruciatingly painful for the negligent, you know, manufacturer or corporation or government, and they're not. See, it should be a restriction or a deterrent, and it's not.
Right.
And so we have all these frivolous lawsuits, and the reason you got all these ambulance chasers is because there are juries and judges out there that are willing to, you know, stretch the legal meaning of just about everything under the sun and create these onerous awards. It's crazy. It's like a lottery. You know, people are playing the lottery.
Exactly. Well, you know, the other aspect of it, when you talk about no personal responsibility, look what's been happening in our court systems for how long. Well, like I said, and then you have the other kind of lawyers that go on criminal defense cases, and they claim that the people, oh, this person can't be sent to jail, he was drinking alcohol. You know, there's no personal responsibility. They will trump up any fiat, crazy BS, you know, excuse to say, oh, they can't be held accountable, they're this, they're that. Usually they go for the insanity defense, but now that we have people who can, there are laws that state you have to be proven completely a blithering, you know, basket weaver upside down in, you know, somewhere, some padded cell before you can be tried.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
They
just use that.
It's
crazy.
Usually what they have to demonstrate for, you know, mentally incompetent or criminally insane is that they have no concept of right and wrong.
Exactly.
That's a tough road to hoe right there.
Yeah.
That they didn't know what they were doing was wrong.
Yeah. See,
and there are those people out there. There are some people out there that, you know, they, honest to God, the wires are crossed and they just don't know any better.
They're called sociopaths.
Far between. Yeah, they're pretty few and far between.
Yeah, like the Congress. They don't know right from wrong.
You take somebody like a Bundy or a you know, Kaczynski or somebody like that, and obviously those are two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
They knew damn good and well that what they were doing was wrong.
Sure.
You know, they were fully aware of it. You know, Bundy, that was his rush. That's they get off on it.
Yep.
That's not criminally insane. The guy's just wrong.
Sick. Yeah, he's wrong. Well, yeah, they need to be put away. So the other thing that really gets me upset, and I talked to my mom about this the other day because we're talking about what's going on in our political realm, and I said, that damn 17th Amendment just gripes me because you know how the senators are now not beholden to the people they're supposed to represent in their individual state. They just go to Washington. They get mired down in the primordial slime of that miserable satanic hole, and they don't give a rat's behind about their constituents, and that's what needs to be changed, I think. I really believe that.
Yeah, the 17th Amendment was further gutting the power of the states because the senators were supposed to be representing the individual state, and our congressmen, our representatives, are supposed to be representing the people. So we had co-equal branches of government.
Right.
But when you have, election by popular vote for senators, they're not representing the state.
No.
They're supposed to be representing the state government, okay, and not the people individually.
And the only thing they wind up representing themselves is themselves and their own interests and their own pocketbooks.
They represent the good old boys network.
Yeah, and then they can spend 500 years in the Senate, like Harry Reid. He looks like he's 500 years old. I can't stand it.
Well, I'm hoping that we're seeing some more of that with Lugar sent packing. May he rest in peace from our state Senate from Indiana. You know, the people are fed up. They're pissed, and they're going to lash out. And these folks think that, you know, the Tea Party has gone away. They haven't.
No. Nope.
And I know you've been fighting out in California with the Agenda 21. But I don't know that we can have enough of an impact to turn the ship around from, you know, heading over the falls at Niagara, which is where we're going.
Yeah. Oh, we're there. I mean, it's terrifying. That's why I mentioned about the DHS and all that stuff's coming down. And you know, and everybody that's an economist that has half a brain knows this cannot last. And once it goes, then the civil unrest will happen. And that's why I'm preparing the best that I can. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And Ozone, thank you so much for calling and listening. And Ron, always a pleasure because you add so much to the show and because we get a perspective that we may not have thought about since you know the law better than some of us. And we're trying to catch up. We're working on it. I'm working on my Econ 101 and trying to get that. I've got Hayek's book. I just haven't had time to read it. I also have Griffin's book on Jekyll Island. I'm getting through my small ones. The other ones I mentioned are very, very thick. They're like 500 pages each, so it's going to take me a while. But it'll be worth it. I need to educate others, Ron. I have to do it.
On the Ludwig von Mises Institute.
Okay.
Sign up for their newsletter. They'll send you little email stories every day.
Okay.
And you'll learn more about economics reading through that stuff than you will a pile of books.
Yeah, I know. It's just nice to know from the other perspective because these guys, they're not stupid people. You know, Hayek was not, and I don't think Griffin is. I think it's good to learn as much as I can.
You've got to get all the different angles.
Yeah, then I can take the book in my hands and say, look, I have it right here.
You know? Well, and that's why I kept saying, you know, regardless of, I don't know how it's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but I can tell you that in the Keynesian model that they're following with this expansion, this debt credit expansionary system, at some point it hits critical mass.
Yeah.
And there's nowhere to expand because all the people that are productive that can pour money or time into the system to help support all the expansion, at some point you hit a wall. And we're very near that. And not just here in the U.S., but around the globe. So something's going to have to give.
It will. And I'm just going to do it. I've got 35 seconds, so Hopefully people will come to our site, www.patriotfamilies.com, for all our radio shows. Tomorrow is Terry Rowland. Do not miss her show. She's amazing. Patriot Education, 7 p.m. Eastern. And just go to www.patriotfamilies.com. I misspelled it on the thing because I was typing too fast. And thank you all so much. Bill, Ron, Guest, Oz, Ozone, Michael Magic, and everybody. Thanks, Ron. I'll find that one, Mrs.org. I had the first part correct. Anyway, guys, God bless and have a great evening.